TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair? Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Masks, mothers and fathers align saving kids. Kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health issues, including school issues, addictions. If you know somebody that needs a referral to a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient clinic, a rehab, maybe a yeshiva liaison, hear which school to put your child into, maybe you need to change programs, feel free, give us a call. We also have parent support groups by Zoom for now. So give us a call at our anonymous, confidential helpline, 718-758-0400. Again, I'll repeat our number. Maybe it's you want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, someone you usually sit next to in shul, 718-758-0400. It's Erev Yontif. We're really by Bedikas Chametz by night. And yet, I am so honored to have on with us someone we've had on before many times and want to have on for many more times. And that is Menachem Pyznansky, who's not only a wonderful colleague, a wonderful clinician, the director of the drop-in center of, it's called Our Place. And Our Place is not Mask's Place. When I say Our Place actually is the New York Drop-In Center, which is an Oasis Recovery Clubhouse program for Jewish young adults and couples in recovery from addiction. And not only that, which is more than enough, but Menachem is also the author of Stepping Out of the Abyss, a Jewish guide to the 12 steps. And consciously, 6 steps to living vibrantly with our Creator. And not only that, but Menachem also is a publisher focusing on the messages of Jewish spirituality and hosts 2 podcasts, not 1, but 2. So I'd like to welcome you, Menachem, who is also licensed clinical social worker, LCSW. I'd like to welcome Menachem Pyznansky, a very dear friend and colleague to Mask's parents, to Mask, to me. Welcome tonight on the show. Thank you for being on.
Hello, Ruchama. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure and a privilege to be here, and especially to honor all the great work that Mask does for the Jewish people, and also a pleasure to speak to you as my longtime mentor and friend, colleague. What a privilege.
Thank you. Thank you, Menachem. There's one thing I left out when I introduced you, actually. You also run the living room. So for my audience, let's start with the living room. And who do you serve at the living room, please?
Well, the living room has been like the joy of my career. And in the living room, we serve young Jewish people, 18 to 35, that are seeking recovery, mostly individuals who have come out of a treatment center, who are coming back to the New York area, either Brooklyn, Muncie, or even the Five Towns. We have offices in all of those locations. helping them get situated, helping them get connected to recovery supports, and helping them connect with a recovery community. And it's a privilege to do it. It's amazing work. I'm really, really grateful for the opportunity to do that work. And it's the privilege of my career.
And it's an extension of our place, right? The drop-in center, it's connected.
Yes. Well, our place in New York is a marvelous organization that runs a variety of services for young people. One of the things that we do is that we have a drop-in center for boys and girls in Flatbush. We also have a sober living that's located in Rockland County in Muncie. And we also have the living room, in addition to some other supports. The living room is specifically focused on young adults who are actively seeking recovery.
Right. So, Menachem, let's get back to your two books that you wrote, A Jewish Guide to the 12 Steps, Stepping Out of the Abyss, and Consciously, 6 Steps to Living Vibrantly with Our Creator. Can you briefly describe for my audience about your books and what made you write them?
Well, both really have they're different books, but they both have a similar theme in the sense that I showed up on the scene 17 years ago to work with individuals in recovery, and I noticed a gap of information, both for those individuals that were in recovery, but also for their families. And the first project that I had the privilege to work on with my partner, Arya Buxbaev, was to write a comprehensive guide to the 12 steps that's really available for family members, clergy, rabbis, teachers, to try to understand the 12 steps and to try to understand the people that are actively practicing the 12 steps. And then after that, the follow-up to that was really to write a book for individuals in recovery that really looked to draw parallels between the spirituality that they were practicing in the 12 steps and our Jewish heritage, our Jewish faith. And that kind of focused in on the principle of conscious contact, which is how they describe spiritual connectedness with God in the 12-step recovery programs. And based off of a holy text, Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, I took some of the principles and exercises from there, and we were able to put together a really nice small little book that's had great reception, both from people and individuals in recovery, and also from a variety of young people just seeking to connect in a real and vibrant way. And it's been a real privilege. It was a real privilege to write it. And it's been a real privilege to kind of try to carry that load. And it's been wonderful.
And I remember 17 years ago when you started out, and boy, have you come a long way. Very sought after therapist. Hard to get an appointment by you. Menachem, you talk about integration with recovery, spirituality, and Judaism. Can you explain to my listeners about what happens to an addict and how they give up with God so quickly, and the importance of bringing the spirituality back into their lives with recovery?
Oh, that's a great question. So this has been really the great thrill of my career, to kind of find recovery and then to really focus in on helping people find parallels between their recovery and their Yiddishkeit. And what happens is, and this is a theory that really began before 1939 when the 12 steps emerged on the scene, but really kind of crystallized when the 12 steps were introduced, which was the idea that the reason why addicts, the thing that was driving them to continue to return to their addiction, even though it was clear that their addictive use of specifically alcohol and drugs was not working for them, was some type of underlying existential or spiritual unwellness. Right. Well, the reason why they continue to use addictively or to abuse drugs and substances is because they were physically or psychologically dependent on the drugs. But once they were detoxed and once they were removed, the question that society always had, even we as the Jewish people had, was why do they return? And the theory was, and this is a theory that we even kicked around amongst our own literature and our own people from Torah, is that there's a spiritual angle to that. And what the people specifically in the 12-step and other recovery programs found was that by teaching addicts to fill their lives with positive spiritual associations, and specifically a relationship with God that includes gratitude and prayer and reflection and journaling and all sorts of other really positive behaviors, that it allowed them to transcend their previous traumas and live an entirely new life. Now, for individuals that come from an Orthodox background, from a Frum background, or individuals that are just Jewish and want to really connect to Judaism, who are in recovery, sometimes there was a barrier. They really want to connect to their Judaism, but there's sometimes a language barrier or an association barrier. And what really became a career driver for me was helping people to traverse that space and to really be able to draw connections and bonds. Because everything that we talk about in the recovery programs, everything that we counsel people in terms of getting involved in recovery programs, is very much nested in our Jewish tradition. It's very much nested in the Sifrei Pnimiyas HaTorah, in the books of Machshava and Musar. And they're things that we've been practicing as a people for a long time, maybe not focusing on as much as we could. But specifically individuals that experience addiction and other challenges, it's really important to put a focus on that. So drawing those connections not only help individuals in recovery connect to Judaism, but they help Jews connect to recovery. And that's been really a big focus for me. And then not only that, one of the things that's really occurred, and this is not only exclusive to me, I mean, obviously I'm really operating in a space, just to mention him, that Rabbi Abraham J. Tursky, who only recently passed away, really created. I acknowledge that wholeheartedly, but also Shay Staub and my friend Joey Rosenfeld and others and many others who are operating within this space of recovery, trying to reveal the way in which the principles of recovery are nested very much in our Jewish tradition and in our Torah.
So Pesach is coming, and that means that families get together, the holiday first night, sit down. There's wine, grape juice, all over the place, bottles and bottles and bottles. It plays really a prominent role in the Seder. So let's discuss some advice you may have for individuals and families around these issues that may come up.
Great.
What advice, for instance, would you give to individuals in recovery, let's say, that are attending a Seder for the first time sober? They've gone through their struggles. They are ready to get the help they need. They attend meetings. They're in sober living. They're going to 12-step. They have a sponsor, whatever it may be that is their recovery. Hopefully all of the ones I mentioned. And now for the first time, they're going to sit down. They are going to be people that drink wine at the Seder. How do they, prepare themselves?
So that's a great question. And we've been spending a lot of time at the living room kind of talking to people about that, preparing for that. And there's nothing to shy away from the fact that individuals in recovery, particularly people in early phase recovery, need to prepare for that. And that if you don't make the mistake of turning your back on a potential problem, it can never, sneak up behind you. So it's really important to kind of do some prep work. That's the first suggestion that I would make. The next suggestion is always know that you can leave. When an individual is in recovery and they feel like they're trapped, anytime anybody with any type of mental health challenge feels trapped, feel like there's no way out, it only exacerbates the anxiety and the tension and the overwhelming impulse to run, and maybe to run in a way that's inappropriate. So one of the best things you can do is to give yourself permission. And if you're attending a family Seder or maybe the Seder of somebody who cares about you, to let them know, I'd love to come, because recovery is a bridge back to life. And the point of recovery is to be able to connect back with your life and to live a full life. But especially in the early recovery years, sometimes you have to let your host know, I want to come, I plan to stay, but if I leave, please understand I'm going to do it quietly and respectfully, but there's a reason why I'm leaving. I'm not meaning to be disrespectful. Oftentimes when you make that kind of plan, and I'll talk about some others, when you make plans ahead, you don't need them. It's when you don't make the plans that you end up needing them. So the first thing is always know that there's a way out. The other one is create a certain safety word with someone that's there. I don't mean to say that in a silly way, but if you're next to somebody, particularly if you're next to somebody who's kind of can be a buddy for you, or even if it's somebody that you need to reach out to, maybe a neighbor, maybe someone on the street, to let them know that you're having a hard time. Again, when you have that safety word, you more often than not don't need to utilize it, but having it alone is a great check. The other thing is to take a break. If you're having a hard time, go for a walk, take a break. Give yourself a chance to kind of calm down. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Admit if you're having a tough time. And then finally, the most important one, and the one that most is most reflective of recovery spirituality, is if you're having a hard time yourself, direct your attention to somebody else in the room. Direct your attention to a younger sibling or a cousin, or maybe an elderly member of the family. Ask them how they're doing. See how you can be helpful to them. Oftentimes when we direct our attention away from ourselves, it reduces the tension that we feel. It reduces the impulses that we feel. And suddenly we find that something that we were previously struggling with is no longer a struggle.
Thank you. Very important. I want to talk about the parents and the families now. So the parents and the families invite their loved ones, their spouses, children, relatives that are in recovery, sober, or even struggling. There's a lot of wine all over. So my first message to everyone listening, and please say it to one more person, repeat it to one more person after you hear the radio show and let it go forward, is that please put grape juice on the table, not only wine, and let those that decide that they need to use the grape juice, use it without having to ask for it and just have it available. If you're having any guests, please have the grape juice there already. And my second message is, please put away the wine. Make sure after the Seder, it's put in a place that's safe. If you have any young adults that may want even more than four cups later on in the night or all through the holiday. Menachem, you and I know too many kids that started using on Pesach or Sukkot, Simchas Torah, where they got drunk and families didn't know that the wine was all out, the liquor is all out. So it's such an important thing to be very conscious of. So please keep that in mind. So let's go, Menachem, to the parents and the family members. They're having family members or guests that may be in recovery or struggling around the alcohol at the Seder, and in general, what message, what advice would you like to share with them?
So the most important thing when it comes to having alcohol around individuals that, let's say, struggle with substance abuse, or even just teenagers, is as an adult, you have the responsibility and opportunity to model healthy behavior. And what that means is, even if you're drinking, to not be silly about it and not to over glorify it, to treat it with a measure of respect. This sends the right message to the people around the table. But the other thing, and you really hit the nail on the head, Rachama, the most important thing is to not make the individual who's trying not to drink feel weird. Don't specifically point out that they're not drinking. Don't let them know that you know that they're not drinking. Don't make them feel weird. That only is going to be triggering for them and make them uncomfortable and touch on their insecurities. And it's only going to make the whole thing way more complicated. You're not doing them a favor by announcing to the whole table that this is so-and-so's grape juice. Just discreetly and in a focused manner, make sure that there's always grape juice on the table for them and that they know where it is. And that if somebody else wants to take the grape juice, make sure you have extra in the fridge. The main thing is that they shouldn't be made to feel weird. The other thing, and this doesn't just relate to individuals in recovery, but also, let's say, a parent who has a child who's maybe less observant or less interested in the saver, in the Seder. It's really important to include them, to empower them, and then to inspire them. When you start with inspiration, we want to inspire our family members to love the Seder. The Seder is a time of nostalgia and all sorts of other connectedness and also spiritual and mystical elevation. It's a wonderful, wonderful time. But if we focus first on the inspiration, then oftentimes we lose people. The first thing is to include and empower. So for example, an individual in recovery, you know, and anyone who's learned about the spiritual ideals and themes of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they're very much connected to the idea of servitude and redemption and freedom. And those are themes of recovery. And how wonderful it would be and how meaningful it would be to give individuals in recovery, or maybe those who are less observant, a chance to be able to share their experience, strength, and hope at the Seder. Not their experience per se with using drugs or not using drugs, but to share their spiritual message, to invite them beforehand, to say, to prepare something, to say something, not to say a Dvar Torah, a nice cute idea. Those are wonderful. We all enjoy those. But to share something that comes from their experience, from their life experience, that really makes them feel like they're a valued member of the Seder and a valued member of the family, not somebody who's just being tolerated. These are the keys to make them feel celebrated, embraced, and active and participants in the Seder. So that's really the key thing. But I can't say I can't say it anymore, that how critically important it is to not make individuals in recovery that are at the table feel uncomfortable by over-focusing on them, by worrying about their impulses, by reminding them that you know they're in recovery. It's a nice thing to say it discreetly and quietly, but to say it out loud, I've heard way too many people, young people in recovery, where a family member wants, they're trying to be nice, they're trying to do the right thing, but they announce to the table, everyone make sure so-and-so doesn't get near the alcohol. And that can be the most triggering thing at all, to treat them with a measure of respect and to respect their recovery and to know and to let them leave if they need to leave, and let them step away if they need to step away, and let them take a break if they need to take a break, and let them focus on talking to their younger siblings or talking to their younger cousins or talking to their elderly family members. Let them do something else if they get busy with that, not focusing on kind of pulling them back into the theme of what's going on. Because oftentimes those are the things that they need to do. They need to get busy with doing other things that feel good about them. And that's how they can participate and be a part of the Seder. And to allow the process to play out as it will, to let the process happen. That's the key, to not try to dictate their experience. Let them be inspired in the way in which they're willing to receive the inspiration.
Absolutely. And Menachem, I just want to add, the Seder is a very long, boring for some young adults experience, maybe in their home. We hear from many young adults. And if they want to help in the kitchen, let them help in the kitchen. If they can't sit the whole time, you know, doing the Seder. So,
ask them to help in the kitchen. Yeah. I think that's a great suggestion. If you find that they're getting antsy, give them something to do. Give them something, a physical action to do, particularly a teenager. It's a wonderful way to include them, to make them feel needed and to make them feel empowered to be a part of, without having to constantly battle and sit in their seat with something that they're not yet inspired by.
And even if you prepare for your family member, maybe two storybooks for a younger sibling, so then you can always suggest to your loved one that's struggling, why don't you read, you know, the storybook, to your younger sister. They want you to read the book to them, just to distract them from the long Seder night. You know, it's hours and hours and no food until later on.
Right.
And it does become very difficult for many of the people that struggle. Okay, we're going to be running out of time, but I do have another question for you. Would you mind, please, can you give us some parallels between the themes of Pesach and recovery and spirituality, please?
So just briefly, you know, the story of Pesach is the story of a people that were at their bottom. You know, in the recovery circles, they say that when you're down to nothing, God's up to something. And nothing could better describe what happened in Egypt. When Chazal tell us that we barely could cry out to Hashem for help, that we were so entrenched within Egyptian society and culture that we were on the 49th level of impurity. And it was in that space that God entered and redeemed us, pulled us out. And this is the theme of recovery. This is the theme of recovery. The foundation of the recovery process is the individual's rock bottom experience that gives them the opportunity to reach out and ask for help, to be willing to receive help, to be willing to try a new way of life. And then the next aspect of Pesach comes to the Kriyas Yamsuf, when the Jewish people, which we come to at the end of Pesach, Shvi Shal Pesach, when the Jewish people come to the Yam, and they're stuck between the army of Egypt and the waters in front of them. And that's often the way that an individual, particularly in early recovery, feels. They feel trapped, overwhelmed by the life ahead of them and everything they have to do, and also by the life behind them that seems to always be dogging them along the way. And what God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is a beautiful message we were just talking tonight about at the living room. God says, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God in prayer, and God says, Ma titzak elai, why are you crying to me? Speak to the Jewish people and get moving. And this is a message that everyone in recovery needs to hear, not that we should minimize the power of prayer, but that action, positive, right action, is the key to a recovery process. And this is a theme that we celebrate as Jews. And then, of course, the matzah, the bread of our affliction and the bread of our faith, that the very thing which makes us feel the lowest, which oftentimes we feel most overwhelmed by, is the very thing that is a key to a new relationship with God and a faith that will lead us to Matan Torah, to the reception of a divine inspiration, and for us, a divine revelation of Torah, but ultimately to the promised land, to Eretz Yisrael, historically speaking, but for each individual in recovery, the promised land of a new way of life, the promised land of a new way of living. And those are just some of the, like, the subtle keys and themes of recovery. You can find amazing stuff. Rabbi Chase Taub, Rabbi Joey Rosenfeld are two of the really great teachers that we have today, among others, that are teaching all of these themes and concepts, and how recovery and recovery principles are so present in our tradition and our faith.
Thank you, Menachem. It's always wonderful having you on. Really special thank you to you. Good luck to you. Have a Chakash Shabbat Sameach to you.
Thank you so much, Rechama, for everything you do, for all MASK does, and everything. It's wonderful to speak to you. Thank you so much for giving me the chance to be on.
Thank you. And I want to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and especially for those that are struggling and in recovery, I want to say a Chag Sameach V'Kosher. Always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually for now, hug tight. Thank you. Have a wonderful Shabbos, a beautiful Yontif, and tonight's show is Lizech Nishmas Rivka Bas Yisroel. Thank you, and have a good night and a good Yontif.
This year for the Seder, make sure you have A&B famous gefilte fish on your table, because A&B is famous for being the number one gefilte fish in kashrus, in freshness, and of course, in taste. Do you know that A&B checks each whitefish fillet for fish worms and each individual egg for blood drops, as well as the onions? A&B Famous Gefilte Fish is made with 100% fresh fish, fresh eggs, freshly chopped onions, 100% natural, no preservatives, no MSG. It really makes a difference in taste. Available in regular sweet, less sugar, sugar-free, Hungarian style, pike and white, low cholesterol, and their salmon gefilte fish, and for all year round, carb-free gefilte fish too. By the way, don't forget to try their new Parv Kishka. If you're gluten-free, stock up for the whole year. Also available, tilapia fish, no water added. Please look for your favorite gefilte fish in brand new packaging. A&B Famous Gefilte Fish is in the freezer section near you.
When it comes to Pesach, nothing but the best in quality and kashrus will do for your Seder and Yom Tov meals. For the last 60 years, Marv at Kosher Poultry has been providing the cleanest, finest, and tastiest chickens, turkeys, ducks, and Cornish hens for discriminating kosher consumers. Marv also has the most kosher supervision, including the OU, MK, Hisachdus, and COR as well. So, this Yom Tov, make sure Marv is on your family's table. Available at the finest kosher supermarkets. A Chag Kosher V'Sameach from Marv Poultry. Ancient tradition, today's taste.
Thanks for listening.